This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Tuesday, May 1st, 2012. I'm Caleb Brown. Good immigration policy means respecting people's humanity, understanding immigrants' contribution to economic performance, and rejecting xenophobia. That's the message from Democratic Representative Zoe Lofgren of California. She spoke at the Cato Institute's conference on immigration held last week.
I just wanted to make a few comments about the state of the law, and then I, of course, welcome some questions. You know, as someone who's been involved in the whole legislative scene on immigration, I've just got to say the whole system is a mess, really. It needs reform from top to bottom. You've got a situation where families, husbands and wives, can be separated for 4 and 5 years or more, where adult American citizens can be separated from their adult sons and daughters. Stuart and I keep running into each other at these events. His study indicating that an employment-based visa application based on a Bachelor of Science degree when the individual's born in India could result in a 70-year wait. How competitive is that? When you take a look at employment-based, you know, a lot of Americans think that people are here illegally because they just declined to go and use the regular system and don't realize that there is no way to legally come over to the United States. We have 5,000 permanent residence visas a year allocated to people whose immigration would be based on their employment skills who don't have a bachelor's degree, and that's for everybody, farm workers, everyone, and it's not a surprise then that we have, as by some estimates, 11 million undocumented individuals who've come over to meet economic demand. And in a lot of economic sectors, there is tremendous reliance on this undocumented workforce. Agriculture is one of the prime examples, and I think we've seen the impact when states crack down in Georgia and other places, the farmers go under. The crops rot, and we've had a number of hearings, and I've met with these farmers. I mean, they try in vain to find migrant farm workers who are Americans, and there is not a line out the door of people wanting to sign up to be migrant farm workers. I think to some extent, well, and looking at the high tech sector, I represent a part of Silicon Valley. You know, my son graduated from Stanford last June, not in electrical engineering, he's a poet. But I watched the computer science PhD recipients, about half of them I would guesstimate were foreign students. And I just thought how much wealth is represented by this group walking across, you know, the stadium there. They are just going to go out and invent things and found companies and create lots and lots of jobs, and we're going to make them do that in some other country, even though many of them would prefer to become Americans with us. And of course, the rhetoric that has in the political arena surrounded the subject of immigration, I think, is very unfortunate. I think some candidates have almost painted themselves into a corner. How are they going to get out of the extreme position they've painted themselves into so that we can have some kind of bipartisan consensus to reform the law in the interests of the American economy and the American public? You know, we had the first four hearings in the subcommittee this year were about how immigrants take American jobs. And I suppose you can find in a country this large some instance where that happened. But all of the economists who advise us say that for immigration really is complementary for the most part with American needs. You've got individuals who are really at the very high end that any country would want to have and then you've got people who are migrant farm workers who are doing a very tough work at the lower end. It's skilled, but it's not based on an classroom education, and those tend to be, at both extremes, areas where we're not meeting our own need with native-grown talent. But that fact sort of gets lost in the rhetoric. For a long time, and I still believe, that we need to reform immigration from top to bottom, and we didn't make progress, not when the Republicans were in charge and not when the Democrats were in charge. And I think that we have had a breakthrough, however, on the Democratic side. This year, I mean, given that I want to reform the whole system, I'm also one who says, let's do what we can. And so I put together a bill that did, it's called the IDEA Act, and it does reform primarily on the employment-based side, although it does do a few other things. It reforms the H-1B program, which it needs to be reformed. It provides green cards for master's and above graduates in STEM fields from research universities. We don't want fly-by-night U. It's about 200 research universities who are turning out the top scientists and engineers. Provides a startup visa. You know, the EB-5 program has its utility. It's got a few problems as well. But that's not really how companies get started. You bring in money. I think about Larry Page and Sergey Brin, who founded Google. They didn't do it because they had $1 million. They did it because they had these great ideas. And then they got venture funding, and that's how it started. So the startup visa would allow venture funding. We got a sweat equity bill. I think of Marvell, which is a fabulously successful company also in my congressional district, founded by two immigrants. She from Shanghai, he from Singapore. They met while they were getting their PhDs in electrical engineering at the University of California, Berkeley. And they couldn't get venture funding, but they got, it was sweat equity and family money and credit cards and the like. And now they employ 3,500 engineers along Highway 237. My constituents are glad to have jobs there. So it would provide visas in that category as well. This is important because despite the sometimes, I think, odd rhetoric that we have at the Immigration Subcommittee, immigrants play a huge role in technology development. About 25% of the startups in the country are from immigrant entrepreneurs. In Silicon Valley, it's more than half are immigrant entrepreneurs, and I heard someone on the panel before. It's true. It's not all just based on family visas. Sergey Brin came here as a child. His parents, his mother's a lovely woman I recently had a meeting with. They were Jewish refugees, I mean, from Russia. You think of Jerry Yang, founded Yahoo. He grew up in East San Jose. It was his mother who was the immigrant, and he came with her. Or even Andy Grove, who did so much for Intel. Andy came as a refugee from Hungary. So we get great people in various different ways. And I think if I think about immigration in this way, people with enough get up and go to get up and go are the kind of people we want. When you think about the traits of immigrants, they really are the traits we admire in our country. People who are not afraid, people who are optimistic, people who are risk takers, people who are forward thinking and not dwelling in the past. That's who immigrants are, whether they're coming to pick strawberries in the hopes that their children can be doctors, or whether they're coming to start a company. That's who immigrants are, and that's our history. We need to make sure that we don't cut that off and impair our future. Now, just a bit on family-based, because I think Stuart is right. We don't need to have a fight between the family-based immigration and employment-based immigration. I can't tell you the number of times I've received calls from companies in my district where they've got an engineer, a key person, whose spouse is stuck in India, and the engineer is saying, forget it, I'll go back to India. You know, this is not competitive. And Stuart, I think, is right. I don't have the exact numbers memorized, but most of the family-based immigration, in terms of the numbers, are the spouses and children of American citizens or legal permanent residents. And I remember, as a measure of how far things have deteriorated in the Judiciary Committee, in 1996, there was an idea to put minimum standards on spouses, and that an American citizen couldn't petition for his wife unless she at least had a bachelor's degree or a high school diploma. And one of the really conservative members of the committee said, wait a minute, the federal government's going to tell the Americans who they get to marry? And so that was actually taken off the table. We are not harmed when American families are united. In fact, I think the country is strengthened in that way. I do think that obviously there's limits. We can't have everybody in the world who wants to come here. We can't be permitted to come. We have to regulate the flow into the United States. But it's worth also taking a look at the demographics here, something we never talk about. But the only country on the North American continent that is actually has a birth rate sufficient to sustain its economy is the United States. Canada doesn't. Mexico doesn't. And to some extent, we are fortunate because immigration has helped us do that. Now, I could go through all the details of the IDEA Act if you wish, but I think it's easier probably for you to either get that on questions or not. But just a word on what we need to do politically. You know, when I decided to introduce the IDEA Act, I spent a lot of time on it, and I understood not just what the bumper stickers were, but what's the real issue if you're a high technology company? What's the real issue if you're in the venture capital world? And so we wrote it in a way that we think would actually work, and there were a lot of provisions that I had worked on with Republicans in past Congresses. So. We've got the endorsement of the IEEE, which is interesting because they are not always supportive, largest engineering association in the world, but they are supportive of the bill, the venture capital world, technology companies, family immigration groups. We broke through the fight between do all or nothing, and Luis Gutierrez, who is a wonderful person and has been a vigorous advocate for immigration reform, is an original co-sponsor of the IDEA Act. So we have broad consensus on the Democratic side to do this. I went to my friends, and I won't mention names because I don't want to embarrass them, but people who I'd worked with in the past to see if we could get some Republican co-sponsors, and I spent months doing it. I couldn't get a single person to co-sponsor the bill, even people who we'd worked on the same things in the past. And I think it's because of the political environment. The vibrant anti-immigrant rhetoric in a small, it's not the majority of the American people, but it's an agitated small group, it needs to be tamed. I mean, people have a right to their viewpoints, whether I agree or not. I don't mean to say that. But we have to create an environment where reasonable people can take reasonable steps that are in the interests of the country. And we can't let fringe elements terrorize legislators to be fearful of taking the step that the majority of the American people want them to take. So I think all of us have a role to play on that. Certainly, I am trying to create an environment politically that makes it possible for people to work together. I'll close with this, and then I understand we want at least half the time for questions. Recently, there was an article in, I think, one of the Hill newspapers saying that I had a secret plan. Well, it wasn't exactly a secret plan, but here's something that happened. I can say it because it's been disclosed in the past, but in the last Congress where the Democrats were in the majority, we had actually hundreds of hours. That almost never happens with members. You know, the staff does a lot and we love them, but we had hundreds of hours that the members themselves put in sessions going through all of the issues. And without saying who participated in these discussions, I'll just say that they're people who I don't agree with on almost anything. But the question is, can we examine this problem and could we come up with solutions that would work for the country? And the interesting thing was, the answer is yes. And the reason why it took so long was that we wanted to make sure that we understood in detail, each of us, how it would work and what the impact would be in terms of numbers and what were the political shoals. And at the end, we came up with a vehicle that we watermarked and we all agreed to. And then, of course, the Tea Party rose ascendant and the political opportunity to move forward diminished. But I still think it's possible to move forward on a bipartisan basis. It involves respecting each other, listening to each other, and being willing to take a few risks, just like the immigrants do when they come here. We have never revealed who was at these meetings, and I won't now, and none of us have ever distributed the draft, and I won't now. But I just say that as a piece of hope, because behind all of the arguing and screaming, there are people who can work together in good faith and make something work for our country that works for American families and that works for our American economy. And it's not often that we feel positive about Congress, I know, but I think there is a capacity to have hope here. So with that, thank you very much. I look forward to your questions.
Zoe Lofgren represents California's 16th district in the U.S. House. She spoke at the Cato Institute's conference on immigration held last week. You can watch the full event at cato.org.